Hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio from Monday, May 10th, 2010. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale. If you have a small health and beauty business, this is the perfect place to go to get your products in bulk so you can scent them and create them and get private label as well. Don't spend all your time making all your products. Make sure you have some time to market them as well. Essential Wholesale can help you do that. Learn more at EssentialWholesale.com. Well, you know, have you ever been laid off of a job? I haven't, but my husband has, and people I've worked with have also been laid off of a job in the past. And our guest today is like a lot of the people that you know, and maybe even yourself if that's happened to you. One time, he was laid off of a job, and it led to a lot of exciting things in his life, including a new book that he's just published. It's called An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice. My guest today is Bruce Ketcher, Ph.D. He is an organizational psychologist and the founder and president of the Discovery Consulting Group, a management consulting firm based in Sharon, Massachusetts. In addition to all the other things he's done and this great book, he offers training and mentoring to aspiring and experienced independent consultants. You can find out more at centerforindependentconsulting.com. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Oh, thanks very much, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I should also mention that Bruce was assisted in this book by freelance business writer Adam Snyder. So, Bruce, let's start with a little bit about how you started down this road. You had a job, like a lot of us did, a traditional job, and then one day something happened to you. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, I remember it well. It was 17 years, 2 months, and 4 days ago. I was working, actually, at a large independent consulting firm. It was an international consulting firm. And my boss came up to me, and he said, "Bruce, we need to talk." He brought me into his office, and he said, "You know, people aren't buying what you're selling, so I'm afraid we're going to have to lay you off." And for me, this was devastating. I had moved my family. I'd been working at this firm for 3 to 4 years and had worked very hard and achieved some good results. And what was I going to do? I had a big mortgage to pay. I had my whole family here. What was I going to do? But for me, it was like a scene from Gone with the Wind. If you remember the movie or the book, there is a scene where Scarlett O'Hara returns to Tara, the beautiful southern plantation where she was raised. This is at the end of the Civil War. They had been using the Tara, this beautiful mansion, as a military headquarters. There were people, all these officers from the Confederacy walking around, and all the artwork is gone, all the furniture is gone, her father has gone mad, of course all the slaves are gone, and she's totally distraught. This beautiful southern life that she grew up in is gone. And she doesn't know what to do, and she's hungry, but there's no food anywhere. She goes outside, and the field has been totally picked over, but she reaches into the ground, she grabs a root, she takes a bite out of it, and she holds it up to the sky, and she says, "May God be my witness, I'll never be hungry again." And that's what happened to me. I said, nobody's ever going to have that kind of control over my life again. Whether there's a merger, there's a downsizing, the company goes out of business, a boss doesn't like me, it doesn't matter. I'm going to fend for myself. I'm going to become an independent consultant, and I'm never going to look back. And it's been almost 18 years, and I have never looked back.
You've never looked back. Well, you know, like I said at the top of the show, I've never been laid off, but I've certainly had lots of friends who had, many in the departments that I've worked for in the past, and I think I made it by the skin of my teeth every now and then over the past 10 years before I started my business. But, you know, Bruce, it's interesting that you tell that story, because that happened to you in 1993, which was kind of, you know, you think it's fair to say kind of the early start to something that's just snowballed since then. So many more people are having that happen today. I know you've done some surveys. Are you seeing people in larger numbers consider consulting, especially consulting from home, as a result of, you know, what's happening so much more frequently today?
Oh, absolutely. People are saying, "Look, I'm tired of getting laid off." And one of the things I do, actually, as a consultant, is I help people find jobs and run outplacement workshops. And it's rare when I ask people, have you ever been laid off before? Almost everybody raises their hand. It's rare that nobody does. And many of them have been laid off more than once. And it's not just because there's something wrong with them. It's because it's something wrong with organizations. The organizations aren't as stable as they used to be, and they come and go. And so many people these days are looking to hang up their own shingle. And also there are many aging baby boomers who are getting close to retirement saying, you know, I'm tired of the 9-to-5, but I'd like to keep on working. I'd like to work part-time. And there's many other people who want more flexibility in their life because they've other responsibilities to attend to. And they'd love to be able to consult and if they can only figure out how.
Right, and that's what your book is all about. And it's such a wonderful book, by the way, for those of you who are listening. I, of course, read it to prepare for this show. It's a fantastic look with not just ideas and concepts, but with case studies as well, which is always so important. So, Bruce, let's talk about something that your book shares a little bit about. It says that lots of people can do this, and almost anyone can do this, you know, in many respects if you have some areas of expertise. Let's talk about exactly what that means and what types of independent consultants exist so we can kind of get a framework for what our options are.
Well, there's really people who consult in almost everything. And thank you very much. I'm glad you like the book. For example, I'm a member of several professional associations of independent consultants. And there are people there who are freelance designers. There are people who are who specialize in helping people look better and dress for success. There are financial people. There are marketing people. There are sales people. Pretty much any kind of job that people have, you can go and do it on your own. As long as you can provide value, you don't need to have a big organization behind you. You don't need to have an office. You can work out of your home for most kinds of service businesses. And even if you want to open a business where you sell a product, you probably also don't even need to have anything more than your own office because you can warehouse things other places. And people are so scared of consulting because they think they can never do it. You only need two things to get started. You don't need a bank account. You don't need insurance. You don't need a website. You need two things. You need a client and a way to get some more. That's all you need.
A client and a way to get some more clients. Okay, well, everybody can get at least probably one client. And I would venture to say that most people can do that fairly quickly because they don't have any other clients, right? So they don't have any other work to do, so they can spend all their time getting clients. So let's talk about, after you get that one client, you've got to do that client's work, and then you have to do more. Share a little bit about what mindset you need to accomplish that.
Well, there's a couple of things. One is, hopefully, with this client you're working on, you're meeting a need for them. Nobody hires you to do any work for them unless you're meeting some kind of a need. And sometimes, if you've been laid off from a job, it may be that what you were doing isn't what you can do as a consultant because there's no need for that anymore, and that's why you lost your job. So you have to find a need. And if you're working with somebody, if you already have a client, you're probably meeting some kind of need. The thing to do is, and most consultants will tell you this, they got most of their business originally and still from people they already know, from the people who already knew, they knew through business or they knew socially, who have confidence and trust in them. You start with your inner circle, and then what you do is you start marketing to those people, to your inner circle, and the more of that you do, you get to your next outer circle, which is people they know. And eventually what you do also as well is you start to market to people who are not connected to you in any way. And that's those are harder to reach, and it's harder to establish your credibility, but it's certainly doable. And that's the lowest probability of how you're going to get business in your first year or two.
So you really do have to work those relationships, and I guess we have probably to start a consulting business far more relationships that can be leveraged for business purposes than we think we do, right?
Absolutely. If you were to sit down and write down a list of all the people you know, not necessarily people who could buy business from you right away or had a need, you'd have hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe even thousands. All those people are possible sources of new business or can lead you to new business.
So this is a great reminder. So let's talk about the types of options that we have. Your book mentions employees, which I guess we pretty much describe as people who work for other people for a salary, independent contractors, and contractors. or independent consultants and contractors. Can you tell us what the difference between those is?
A contractor is sort of in between an employee and a consultant. A contractor is somebody who, let's say, they work for a big company on a project. So they might be hired to do some programming work or to do some other or some engineering work or any kind of work on a part-time basis. It may be they're working full-time, but it's only for a certain period of time. And typically, they wear a different badge. They're not really part of the in crowd because they're not an employee. They don't receive any benefits. If there's extra bagels left over, sometimes they can have them. But they're not real employees. And many people delude themselves into thinking that if they're a contractor, they're a consultant. But they're not. They're really what they are is they're sort of an employee without benefits. And a contractor is one of the many business models I talk about in my book. And it's not a good business model because typically contractors are hired either to work most days or every day, but for a certain period of time. And once that's over, then they have to go out and find another contract. So it's not the ideal business model.
So the ideal business model is then a consultant.
Ideal business model, from where I sit, is definitely to be a consultant, is where you'll be working with several clients at once, where you control your own time, meaning you decide when you're going to work there and when you're going to work out of your own office. You control how you do the work. They don't tell you, here's exactly how we want it done, because it's your methods. You're paid handsomely for it, and you're paid enough so that you can afford benefits and retirement just the way you did when you were an employee.
Great. Okay, you know, and one thing that your book talks about when it kind of compares these three options is as employee, independent consultant, or independent contractor, and independent consultant is you have a really useful list which sort of categorizes the benefits of each as either high, moderate, or low. And I found it really interesting that, this is on page 4, by the way, where it says employee has a high as opposed to moderate or low level of job security. Can we talk a little bit about what that means in terms of the security when we talk about the kind of world we're living in right now?
Yeah, well, the high, and I can see why that would raise a red flag, because so many people are getting laid off these days. I mean, there's really not high job security, and job security itself could be is an oxymoron. So relative to being a contractor or consultant, it's high, in that when you're a contractor, you're generally the job you have or the work you're doing may last a year, but usually less. If you're a consultant, many of the projects you might work on will probably be even shorter than that. So if you are an employee, you might have more job security in terms of the length of time that you'll probably be associated with your employer. But it still may not be that long either, because, as we know, people are getting laid off after just a few years there. But the other part of this, I drew a distinction between job security and career security. Consultants have a high level of career security in that they are more in charge of what kind of work they do and also where they live. If you were to, let's say you have a high-paying job and you lose that, you might find another high-paying job in your area, but the odds are good you might have to move yourself and your family to another part of the country or to another country. So you don't have that kind of career security. Also, you may find that the kind of work that you were doing is dried up, and so you really can't do that anymore. You have to change your career to a certain extent if you're really only an employee.
Right. Okay, so there's a lot of things that we really have to be concerned about today when we think about having being employed in a traditional sense and also working as a contractor. We're talking with Bruce Catcher, the author of An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice. So, Bruce, as we close out on the first segment of our show, I'd love to get what would you say to anyone listening that can't listen to the rest of the show, maybe they've got to go, what would you say to them? What is the first thing that we need to do if we've said, okay, you know what, I've had it. Maybe I even still have a full-time job, and maybe it even looks secure, but I don't want to ever be in the position where I have to rely on someone else fully to support myself. What would you say is the first thing they need to do? Of course, they need to get your book. What do they do after that? What action step do they take?
The major thing is psychological, is that you need to make up your mind and commit yourself to it. If you decide, all right, I'm working full-time now, or I'm going to be looking for a job now and maybe consulting, it's not going to work. This has to be something that you make up in your mind you're going to do. You're going to, because it's not going to be easy at first. It's not going to be easy. You're going to have to be committed to it. And in order to be committed, you have to tell the world that you're committed. You have to send an announcement to everybody you know saying, here's the kind of consulting I do. This is who I am. Do you know anybody who needs these kinds of services? And if somebody offers you a job, you say no thank you, because you are now a consultant and you're doing this on your own. Without that, you're never going to get anywhere.
No backup, huh? You got to get yourself out there and make it happen. We're talking to Bruce Catcher. We're going to take our first break right now. We'll be right back. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. Don't touch that mouse.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking to Bruce Catcher, the author of An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice. So, Bruce, let's talk about head trash. What's head trash? And it's obviously something we want to get rid of, but what is it and how do we get rid of it?
Well, head trash is a term that a lot of salespeople use. And it's all these voices that you have in your mind saying things like, I can't charge that much. It has to do a lot with how much you can charge. No way will people be willing to pay that. Well, that's your own head trash, because maybe you don't have that kind of money. You don't have the kind of budget that your clients do. I mean, a lot of my work I sell to Fortune 500 companies, and so writing a check for $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 isn't that hard to do. But if it's not something that you're used to, you can have the head trash in your mind that says, oh, no way could they ever afford that. And so you won't be able to adequately close the sale.
So let's stay on this for a second, Bruce, because I sense from your book and also from people that I talk to that this kind of head trash that almost forces you to undercharge and thereby put yourself out of business is rampant. I see so many people doing that. What is it that gets us to that point, and really, how do we overcome that? I mean, we all know in our heads, okay, I have to charge enough to eat. I have to charge enough to make a profit so I can grow my business and maybe create some other opportunities for myself. But what are your tips for someone, maybe an example from your book or someone that you've seen overcome this before? And I want you to focus, if you can, specifically on women, because I think it's a little bit more of a challenge for us than it may be for men.
All right, I could tell you about my sister-in-law. Sister-in-law, actually, she's a very good producer of documentaries, and she's had a lot of clients over the years. But she is she's scared to charge, and she does a lot of work in the nonprofit area, and she very much connects with and relates to the kind of work that these nonprofits are doing, and so she thinks that she can't really charge them because they're nonprofit, they can't pay. Well, the truth is a lot of nonprofits make a lot of money and do pay a lot for professional services. And so she has it locked in her mind that she can't pay. So, I mean, she's eventually learned over the years that, yes, people will pay, because the reason they're willing to pay is not because they want to be nice to you, not because they know you need to make a living. It's because they have a need and you're providing value to them. And so it's very, what happens to many consultants is they don't really understand the value that they're providing. They think, oh, we're just doing some kind of work that they don't want to do because they're too busy doing more important things. That may be true sometimes, and if that is true, they probably won't want to pay you a lot. But often you're providing a service that they really need, that if they don't get it done, the mistakes are going to be costly to them. They're going to have lost revenue. They're going to have increased expenses. So there's some real value to them. So what you need to really do is think about what value you provide and how much that is worth monetarily to your prospects and your clients. Then you'll be in a better position to know what makes sense for you to charge.
And one of the things I love, too, about your book is you talk about the financial end. We can all sort of look around at what other consultants that are in our field do. They charge $300 an hour, so we'll charge $300 an hour, or definitely we'll make sure we don't go too much above that so we price ourselves out of the market. But you have a better way to think about what you should charge, and I'd like for you to share that with us. It requires us to do a little bit of math. You can pull out your calculator if you're listening to the show. But walk us through that calculation, Bruce, because I think it's critical, don't you?
Absolutely. So there is two sides of this. One side, which I just talked about, is understanding the value that you provide so you can figure out how much to charge. But the other is how much you really need. If you're going to be doing this full-time and want to make a living out of it, there's a certain amount you have to charge, otherwise you're going to starve. So let's do a little bit of the math. I'm going to just go through the example I have in the book. I've used a lot of round numbers. Let's say that your last job, you had a pretty good job, you were making $100,000 a year. $100,000 a year, you had worked your way up to that, and of course you had to pay taxes out of that, but that was your salary, $100,000. Let's say you want to make that as a consultant. You want to make $100,000. Well, you actually need to make a lot more in order to make that $100,000. Here are the other expenses that you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay your self-employment taxes, Social Security and Medicare. You're actually paying now not only the portion that you used to pay, but you're paying the employer's portion. So that's about, on average here, that's about $15,000 if you're trying to make $100,000. You're going to have to pay for your own health benefits. Now, of course, that could be $100,000 itself these days, but probably, let's say, it's $15,000. These are all just approximate. So self-employment taxes and health benefits, those are both $15,000. You're going to have to pay for your own retirement benefits. Someday you're going to want to stop working, so that's about another $15,000, maybe more. There may be other benefits that you want to fund, like disability insurance, life insurance, other kinds of insurances. Let's say we'll give you $7,500 more that you're going to have to make. There's office expenses like equipment, postage, supplies, and if you want to rent an office somewhere because you want to see people outside of your home, it'll be even more. We'll say $10,000 a year. Automobile expenses, $2,500 a year. Marketing expenses, you're going to need to spend money perhaps on a website or on marketing materials, on traveling to networking meetings. So we'll say that's $7,500. I'll total this up in a second. And educational experiences, you need to stay at the top of your game in terms of continuing to develop yourself. You're not going to have colleagues and peers around you who are going to be teaching you new things. You're going to have to go out and learn them yourself. So that's $2,500. So it adds up to, in order to make that $100,000, you're going to need $175,000 when you add that all up. Does that make sense so far?
Sure does.
Okay. So you need $175,000 to make $100,000. All right. So some of you may be gasping. All right. But I got some more news for you. You may take 365 days and say, all right, so here's what I need to charge per day. But it doesn't work that way because mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to bill out every day.
Yeah, because you got to get new business, right?
You got to spend time getting new business. That's a big part of it. So, and there's a number of things. One thing, all right, the number of working days in a year. Let's say there's 52 weeks and you worked 5 days. That'd be 260 days. But you're not going to work every one of those days. There's about 14 holidays you're probably going to take. So you subtract that out from the 260. There's vacation days. You're probably going to take at least 4 weeks vacation. You're a consultant now. You should have more control of your time. And you're probably taking 3 or 4 weeks vacation when you had a job. So that's, you take away 20 days. Sick and personal days, we'll give you 5 of those. And then, as you said, Donna, you're going to have to spend some time marketing, selling, do administrative work, other kinds of things. That's probably about 2 days a week for a lot of businesses that you're going to need to devote. So you subtract out 96 days. You're left with 125 days. So you only got 125 days that you're going to bill out to clients, that you have to make this $175,000 in order for you to be able to earn the $100,000 that you used to make when you were an employee. So if you do the math, that comes out to, I got it right here, about $1,400 a day you need to charge. And that assumes that those 3 days a week of the weeks you're working, you can bill out to clients. If you can't, you're going to need to charge more. So some of you, like you started off saying, Donna, that, gee, some people are charging $300 a day, and they might feel good about that. Somebody's giving me $300 a day. Gee, that's more than the plumber makes. Well, you're not going to make a living that way. You're not going to make, unless your goals are a lot lower than $100,000, and you're really just doing this as a hobby.
So when you do that calculation, I know in your book, I think, what did you say, 75? Trying to figure out how many hours it is a year.
Be 125 days.
There we go, 125 days available for you to bill your clients. So,
right.
And some people may be different from that, but I hope everyone can at least use that as a benchmark. If you're able to bill out 125 days at 8 hours a day, okay, so you work 8 hours a day for 125 days. You can do the math really easily. You may have to lower that number for your days, or maybe you're able to make it a little bit higher. But that's a really good frame of reference, I think, everyone. So thanks for that, Bruce. So once you do that, okay, so you know you need this money, and this is how much you need to charge.
Right, so you need to charge approximately, in order to make that, at least $1,400 a day, or about $175 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody, and I don't recommend this, but if somebody says, what do you charge per day, that, you know, you should have that in the back of your mind, and that's what you need. And hopefully they're also, you're going to be able to provide enough value so it's worth them paying that to you. But if you come in less than that, you're not going to meet these financial goals.
Wow. Okay, so you can do your reality check before you even implement your reality, and the financial part is a big part of that, right? So if let's just say you feel like the market that you've decided to focus on can handle $200 an hour. I'm just pulling that number out of the air. If you have to work an insane amount of days to make that happen, you either need to raise your rate or you need to choose a different target customer.
Exactly. Now, some people sell project work, you know, and they say they might sell a typical project to do anything, to redesign a brochure, to help people come up with a business plan,
yeah,
to help people develop a program. Let's say they sell it for $10,000. All right. Now, if their goal is to make make $100,000 a year, and they're going to need to, as we talked about, make $175,000, they're going to need to sell 17 and a half of these a year. So they have to ask themselves, can I sell 17 and a half of these a year? Is there enough demand? Do I have enough bandwidth myself to do all that work? If
mm-hmm.
not, then they need to charge more or think about some other way to do this.
Right, and then you're pretty much working from that number, know what you have to do. This is excellent. So we've got a question in the chat room, Bruce, from LaShonda Tyree. And she says, Bruce, do you offer a free initial consultation? And if so, how much time should you offer, and how do you control the conversation to keep them from, she says the word gleaning, which I don't know if I would call that leeching. That's not her word. That's mine. Leeching information out of you and then not becoming a customer.
This is a good question. It's sort of the free consulting. Because oftentimes you can meet with a prospect and give them a half an hour or an hour of free time, and then they've got everything they need.
Right.
You haven't made a dime.
Right.
So you got to be careful.
In fact, you've lost money because you've lost 30 minutes, which, depending on what your calculation is, could be well over $100 or $200.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now it depends. When I meet with prospects for a lot of the consulting services I provide, I might spend an hour and a half with them. However, I'm trying to sell sometimes a $20,000 to $50,000 project.
Right.
So and what they're going to take from me, I'm not going to give them everything so they can go off and do it on their own.
Right.
Now, in some cases, you may have to give them more than others. So you
mm-hmm.
have to it has to be something you're comfortable with and something that's going to get you to the actual sale.
And Bruce, in point of fact, can you kind of sense when that's happening to you, like, you know, in the first 2 or 3 minutes of a conversation, can you kind of sense when, is there a gut or some sort of intuition that you get over time that kind of tells you what kind of person or what kind of needs this person has and what their motivation is?
Yeah, absolutely. This is something through some experience, and you learn it pretty quickly, that you'll be able to glean from a few conversations.
Mm-hmm.
A few conversations with prospects. You'll see they're just, you know, they're just trying to pick my brain, and I'm not going to see, they're not going to work with me, and that's unfortunate, and you will get better at learning that, and you'll probably even know that when you make the initial call to set up the meeting, whether that's true.
Good. I'm glad you said pick my brain. That was a much better choice of words than mine, which was leeching.
The other thing, too, which
you say that because you've got to get out there, and you're going to get sucker punched a few times first, right? That's how you learn it.
This is true. And one of the things that I advocate, too, is to sell a service that you sort of, that's repeatable, where you're doing the same kind of thing over and over again.
Okay.
Because if you sell, like, different things to different people all the time, you're not going to be able to have a good sense right away as to whether or not they're just trying to pick your brain and to how much to charge. If you sell a service where you're doing the same thing sort of over and over again, you're going to be able to tell at the first meeting, since you've tried to sell the same thing 10 different times to 10 different people, what's going to happen and how much they're going to real, how interested they really are and how much they are just trying to use you rather than actually respect you as a consultant.
Good. That's a really good tip, too. And LaShonda Bruce has a follow-up question. She wants to know, do you disclose your hourly rate on your website and promotional materials, or do you not do that? What do you recommend?
This is also a very good question, and it's one that I have a very strong opinion about, is definitely don't tell people what your hourly rate is. As a matter of fact, you shouldn't even have an hourly rate. Charging by the hour is also not a very good business model. Just like contracting wasn't a good business model, charging for your time is really what employees do. And you're not an employee, you're a consultant. What you're charging for or should be charging for are deliverables or results. And that comes with a project fee. A project fee. And how much time it takes you is irrelevant. Whether you can produce the results that the client wants in an hour or whether it takes you 100 hours is irrelevant to how much you should charge. So the truth is, things that I do now that used to take me 2 days take me 2 hours. That mean I should charge less for it? If I were charging for my time, it would be. But no, actually, I should probably charge more for it.
This is a really interesting point. You should charge for deliverables and results. Now, we have to take a break, but we're going to come back and we're going to explore that because I certainly think it's important, and I'm sensing that our listeners do too as well. We are talking to Bruce Katcher, author of An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice, and Bruce says you should not have an hourly rate. We're going to come back and pick his brain, because he gave us permission to do that today a little bit more so we can nail that down. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking with Bruce Katcher, author of An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice. And the reason I'm talking so fast is because we only have a few minutes left, and I want to really get to the bottom of what Bruce is talking about here. He says you should not have an hourly rate. You should charge for deliverables. We had to go through that really quickly at the end of the last segment. Bruce, can you elaborate?
Well, people should be paying for results, and they should be paying for deliverables. And For you to just put a dollar figure on it doesn't make any sense. Now, if
what if someone comes to me and says, you're the expert on whatever it is that you do. They come to a person, you know, you are the hot ticket in this area. I really don't know what I want. I don't know what deliverable I want, but I do know that I'm willing to pay you a certain amount of money to pick your brain for an hour. Should people consider that, especially if they're just starting out?
Well, people sometimes will back you to the corner. And the truth is, if your prospect, in some ways the prospect is always right, if there's a set way that they want to pay you, then you may have no choice. But you got to make sure that it's a figure that you can live with. But what I would do is throw it back to them and say, well, getting to the answers to these questions, let's think about what is it worth to you? What is it worth to you in terms of if you had no answers versus the answers you might be able to get? To get them to think about the value is not that they're not like you're a cab driver with a meter running, but you are somebody who's providing something that's of value to them during a certain period of time. So try to get them to focus on that.
Okay, that's a really good way to think about it. But you know, we've got a comment actually from the chat room. Bernadette Snow Finn says she's learning that there shouldn't be an hourly rate too. It can be limiting as the time to accomplish a particular task varies so much. And that's a really good point. But what's interesting too, Bruce, about what she said is that she had to learn that.
Yes. Yes, you learn it over time. You learn it the hard way. Actually, I have an article. It's on my website just about this. It's in New York. It's called 7 Reasons Why You Should Never Charge by the Hour. So if they go to the Center for Independent Consulting.com, they can pull that down.
7 Reasons Why You Should Never Charge by the Hour.
Yeah. I give you another story I have in the book. This was a consultant that came to a class I was giving one morning on how to charge. And he says, Bruce, I'm going crazy. I've got a lot of clients, and I'm billing all my time out, and I'm going crazy. Said, like, what he did was he outsourced business manufacturing to China. So he'd go to China every once in a while and line up places where people could have things manufactured. He says, I got all these clients, and I'm billing them by the hour, and I can't go out and cut my lawn. Because if I go out and cut the lawn, I'm thinking about the time that I'm wasting. If it takes me 2 hours, that's 2 hours of billable time that I've lost. So I said, look, instead, they want results. They don't want your time. They want results. So he switched, and he put them on a retainer basis, and they were happy for it. And he came back, he says, they're happy for it because they don't have to sign off as much per month because the amount is not as much, but it adds up to be about the same amount. And they're getting what they need, and now my lawn looks beautiful.
And his lawn looks beautiful because he does it, or he hired someone to do it?
No, because now he's not charging by the hour. So he's just on retainer. When they need him, he does work for them. When they don't need them, he's free to do whatever he likes.
Yep. Mowing that lawn.
That's what he wanted to do.
This is really making my ears burn. I wonder if my husband's ears are burning. We had a mowing the lawn conversation this morning. It's so funny. He was out there mowing the lawn. And we are a consulting company as well. It's really interesting that he was out there mowing the lawn and a big stick knocked him upside the head. Unfortunately, he was not injured, but, you know, it sort of caught him a little bit by surprise. So we just have the get somebody else to mow the lawn and do some consulting conversation this morning. But
well,
I digress.
It so, probably makes more business sense to do that. But if you really enjoy cutting lawn, that's another story.
Well, yeah, you know, the lawn thing's not so bad, but the stick flying up, you know, when that happens, it kind of makes you rethink things. You know, a professional lawn care person may wear a helmet or something. But anyway, I'm at centerforindependentconsulting.com, Bruce, and I'm looking for that article. Where is it exactly? Can you tell us?
Yeah. If my webmaster didn't put it up, I'll get him to put it up there.
Okay, or in the alternative, if you'd like, you have my email address, you can send it to me, and I can make sure I share it with a link. I'll put it up at my blog and circulate the link so people can go there.
The article
that article, and I'm sure it's very helpful.
The article that's on there now is why you need to focus, which is another really important point about all consultants. If you say you do everything for everybody, people think you do nothing. You have to focus on a particular niche or a particular kind of service.
Now, where do we? Oh, here it is. 7 reasons why consultants must. Okay, down at the bottom left-hand corner of the page for those who are listening. So speaking of that, the third thing I wanted to talk with you about before we close out is the importance of a niche. Can you describe for our listeners a person that you talk about in your book named Mark. What was his problem where a niche was concerned, and how did he solve it?
Let's see. Now, Mark, who I actually just spoke with on the phone this morning, his niche was, he didn't really have a good niche. He was a trainer. He had worked for a number of years in human resources, and he wanted to go out on his own, and so he offered training programs in leadership, in stress management, in time management, in conflict management, all these different kinds of things. And what he found was that people were viewing his services as a commodity. Oh, so he would talk to potential clients, and they would say, well, I can go off and I can get videotapes on that subject, or I can just have people read a book on it, that kind of thing. So there was a limit to how much he could charge. And also, it made it difficult for him to market his services because there were so many different kinds of training that he offered. What people who are successful in training do often is they focus on one thing. So they're the world's expert on time management, and they have books on it, and they know exactly who to market their services to. What he eventually did is he went into a different field, which is coaching, because executive coaching. And he leveraged his experience in the manufacturing industry because he's excellent at manufacturing organizations, and he knows the kinds of issues that people deal with there. And so it's important for all consultants to have a niche, a particular geography, a subject area, a content area that they focused on, which they're that they do better than anybody else. That way they can charge more, and they know who to market their services to.
Excellent point, and we're going to follow up on that. We have a question from the chat room from Bernadette Snow Finn. This is a follow-up, actually, from her first one. She says, I developed my curriculum and my deliverables. Is it okay to offer services at a discounted rate at the beginning until I determine what deliverables are best?
Not sure.
I'm not sure. I think maybe perhaps what she means is just to kind of maybe clarify. And Bernadette, you can let me know in the chat room if I'm clarifying incorrectly. She's developed everything that she wants to sell at a flat rate, but she kind of wants to know if she can or should use an hourly rated offering at the beginning until she determines what deliverables best suit her customers. And that's an interesting question. Is that kind of what Mark did?
You know, he didn't do that, but it's something that I recommend for a lot of consultants, and consider it to be a feasibility study. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do, let's say it has to do with, if she's developing curriculum, has to do with education and training. What I'm going to do is a needs analysis or a feasibility study to see what you really need, and then we'll develop the appropriate program. I know I talk a lot to a lot of programmers who consult on their own, and they say, you know, when I'm asked to come and fix a program, I never really know what's involved until I really get into it. So it's hard for me to price ahead of time. So, again, to them, what I recommend is a feasibility study. Tell them that you're going to spend the time to understand their problem, to articulate to them, and tell them, here's exactly what needs to be done. And then the second phase will be that they can hire you to do it, or you even give them the option of you could hire someone else to do it if you prefer.
Okay, because that way you've armed them with the specific questions they need to ask and get answers to so they can achieve their goal.
That's right. And that is an important part of what any consultant does, is to help the client or the prospect to narrow their focus and understand what their needs really are. And so you should get paid for that too, because that's an important skill.
This is okay, that's really insightful. Bernadette, I hope that answers your question. And you know, I think that scares a lot of people because the feasibility study doesn't get anything that gives the client the ability to say, I worked with Bruce for on something for, you know, a dozen hours or whatever it was, and this is what I got at the end of the day. Well, I guess it does, because it gives them an idea of what it is that they need.
Yeah. The other thing, too...
Great value in that.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing, too, you could do is you can put a fixed price on the feasibility study. Look, it's going to cost you $5,000 or $3,000 or whatever for me to do the feasibility study. If you want, I could just dig in, but it may take me that $5,000... of your time and of your money for me to really even know what the problem is. So why don't you spend the money more wisely for me to understand what the problem is, then you can decide what you need to do to fix it.
And, you know, that really does make so much sense, because what I find often, and I think what other people who are adept in certain areas or have certain backgrounds that lend themselves to consulting, is that many people know they need help, but that's not enough to move you from one point to another. You have to know where you need help specifically before you can even sometimes establish the goals that you have to reach certain points that you want to reach in your business or in your life.
Absolutely. I mean, you could have, for example, you could have a leak in your house. You bring in a general contractor, and the general contractor said, oh, I'll replace your roof. But it could be that that's not where the leak is.
And, you know, that's a really good point, because our hardwood floor started buckling, and, of course, we called our insurance company. But when we got to the service providers, the bottom line was they would come in and take a look at it, and we already knew there was a problem, but we didn't know the source of it. It's really interesting. So they told us that it would cost, I don't know, some crazy amount, maybe $200, just to come out and take a look at it and tell us what was wrong. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
They didn't fix the leak, but we needed their expertise to tell us where the leak was, so that we can then decide what to do in order to address it.
And the reason it's usually useful to the prospect is because otherwise they're there with a blank checkbook, and you're just coming in and trying to fix things without really knowing what it is. But if you could tell them, here, it's going to be this amount of money, and it's a smaller amount first, for me to diagnose the problem and outline what steps are needed to cure it, then we'll go the next step. That can give people a little bit of a sense of insurance that they're not going to be spending money or wasting money trying to fix something that's not really broken.
So, Bruce, let me ask you a question about setting your rates for the first time. If you're trying to figure out what your rates are, you kind of have a general idea. Maybe you've done that analysis that we talked about in the first segment where you look at, you know, you come up with 125 days a year or whatever. Let's say you've done that and the rate is, I'm pulling a number out of the air again, $300 for an hour. How do you translate that into this kind of project work that you're talking about?
Well, there's a couple of ways. I mean, coming up with a price for a project is part art, part science. I mean, one thing you do is to say, well, realistically, how much time is it going to take me to conduct this project for this client?
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say you say it's going to take 10 days, and you're charging $1,000 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Probably too little. All right, so that's $10,000. That's a starting point in your mind. Now, there may be many other filters you need to apply too, like you know what your competitors charge, or you know that this project may lead to some bigger projects, or this is a small nonprofit with only 20 employees. There's no way they can afford this, so I'm going to have to scale this back. So there's a lot of filters you need to apply, but that sort of gives you a general idea of where to start from, having in the back of your mind what your hourly rate or your daily rate needs to be and how much time you think it's going to take you. That's just a starting point.
Really, really good points here. Talking with Bruce Katcher, the author of An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice. So, you know, Bruce, this is such a fantastic book. Again, I suggest that anyone listening make sure that you take a look at it. You can get it at Bruce's website, which is centerforindependentconsulting.com, where you can also get some free articles, which are really helpful there as well. And, Bruce, tell us a little bit more about the services that you provide and how we can contact you. Are you doing some speaking? Where can we go to meet you? Things like that.
Well, if you're in the New England area, I have lots of speeches that I do on consulting. And these are often announced on my website. And also, if you go to the website, you can subscribe to my newsletter, where I every month at least I put out an article on tips for consultants. There's also on the website, there's a report that you can download. It was something that I conducted for the book. It's a survey of 200 independent consultants about how they got started, how they charge, what marketing techniques are most effective, and that's free. And if you are interested in joining the center, you can let me know that too. And we provide services where we help people get started in their business and help improve the amount of money they make and the amount of value they provide to their clients.
Excellent. Good points. Very nice to have you. Bruce Katcher, author of An Insider's Guide to Building a Successful Consulting Practice. Get more information about Bruce and the services he offers at Center for Independent Consulting.com, and join me next week, May 17th, for another edition of Indie Business Radio, when my guest will be Stephen D. Wood, author of Be Bodacious, Put Life in Your Leadership. This is a fantastic book which talks about leadership from a little bit of a different perspective, something unique and interesting that you may not have been exposed to before. So we're looking forward to having Stephen Wood on next week's show, May 17th. I'll see you then. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.